Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, April 1st, 2016. The head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission says some progress has been made on the steps to the formation of the Government of National Unity.
While this is months behind schedule, it is a vital step forward. That said, the parties can do more to prepare for the return of the first vice-president designate to Juba.
And a Catholic bishop calls on authorities to free a former governor who has yet to be charged with a crime.
Let this man be put in a court. If it is court-martial, we shall know that this man committed a crime that deserves that, or whatever, or he is in the prison. Western Equatoria is the family of this man, and he is also a South Sudanese. We need a fair trial.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The chairman of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, a body tasked with the monitoring South Sudan's peace agreement, says the formation of South Sudan's transitional government of national unity could happen in the next 2 weeks. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Festus Mahai, the chairperson of JMEC and a former president of Botswana, told the United Nations Security Council in New York yesterday that despite violations of the ceasefire by both sides, there has been progress in recent weeks that put forming the transitional government within reach.
While this is months behind schedule, it is a vital step forward in the implementation of the agreement, which I welcome. That said, the parties can do more to prepare for the return of the first vice president designate to Juba and ensure that the formation of the new government is not itself destabilizing.
Mahai says he believes the new government, to be run jointly by President Salva Kiir and First Vice President Designate Riek Machar, could be in place by the middle of this month. Since March 24th, about 230 top SPLM-IO officers and bodyguards for Machar have returned to the capital, Juba. Mahai says flights should continue over the coming week until the full complement of the 1370 SPLM-IO officers are transported. To speed up the transitional process, Mahai suggests quickly establishing the Ad Hoc National Boundary Commission to review the number of states as well as their boundaries. He says this is a crucial step in preventing further destabilization. Ellen Loge, the head of the UN mission in South Sudan, also updated the Council on Humanitarian Conditions in the country. She says despite a signed peace agreement and ceasefire, tensions remain high and a lot of work lies ahead.
While I'm slightly optimistic that the developments Chairperson Mahai and I have just highlighted are steps forward, we all know that enormous challenges and hurdles remain. In tandem with this measured progress, continued ceasefire violations, and the rise of previously dormant intercommunal conflicts, coupled with difficulties in meeting the country's growing humanitarian needs, deplorable human rights abuses, and a sharp economic downturn, all threaten to derail the peace process.
Mahai acknowledged the ongoing ceasefire violations, particularly in areas formerly known as Upper Nile, Eastern Equatoria, and Western Bahr el-Ghazal State.
JMEC has publicly released these violation reports so that the full details of the investigations are made known to the South Sudanese and to the broader international community. Notwithstanding these continuing trends, in recent days there has been notable progress, and the formation of the transitional government of national unity now seems within reach.
Mahai says the SPLM-IO confirmed they have no further conditions to the return of their leader, Riek Machar, but warned that the act of forming a transitional government will not automatically relieve the humanitarian, developmental, political, military, and economic crisis that the country continues to face. Ayen Bior, VOA News, Washington.
The bishop of the Tambura Yambio Catholic Diocese is calling on the government to release former Western Equatoria State Governor Bangasi Joseph Bakasoro, who has been in detention for more than 3 months. Bishop Edward Hiboro is appealing to the government to either allow Bakasoro to appear in court to face any alleged criminal charges or release him. The bishop is also asking President Kiir to intervene and ensure Bakasoro is freed. Gift Friday has this report for VOA from Juba.
Security forces arrested and detained former Western Equatoria State Governor Bangasi Joseph Bakasoro late December last year. Bishop Eduardo Hiboro Kusala said early this week that detaining the former governor for months on end without charging him is illegal.
Joseph Bakasoro, he was a governor here and released from his job, and he has been arrested. It's about 3 months now. There's no news, no nothing said about this man. And these are the things that cannot help a country. If an individual has made a mistake, we have a system, we have the laws.
Bishop Kusala says that is not the right way a former governor should be treated.
The way they keep Joseph Bakasoro in prison, and it is not even a prison, I think in detention or whatever, or I don't know whether he's also alive, is not good. It is a lack of respect to the people of Western Equatoria. Lack of respect. Because if there's somebody whom people see as a leader, and if he has made a mistake, you do it in the right way, in the normal way. Those who hear me, tell those who have the power. If the power is too big, you don't exercise it in that way.
Late last month, Bakasoro's family members said his health was deteriorating while in detention. The bishop says young people in Western Equatoria State who loved Bakasoro are afraid to publicly complain about his detention for fear of reprisals. Bishop Kusala says the government should either charge the former governor in a court of law or let him go free.
Let this man be put in a court, tried. If it is court-martial, we shall know that this man committed a crime that deserves that, or whatever, or he is in the prison. The people here who are the family, Western Equatoria is the family of this man, and he is also a South Sudanese, we need a fair trial. We need the hearing.
Bishop Kusala wants President Salva Kiir to intervene and offer an amnesty to Bakasoro, just like as he did to SPLM leaders detained following the outbreak of violence in Juba in December 2013. Presidential spokesman Atenyi Wekaten says the president is not aware of Bakasoro's detention.
I've not been informed about why he is detained, so I don't know.
Colonel Bakasoro was elected governor of Western Equatoria State as an independent candidate in 2010. He was removed by President Kiir in August 2015. Earlier this year, various rights groups also called on government officials to either try Bakasoro in a court of law or release him. For VOA News, I'm Gift Friday in Juba.
Still in Juba, the South Sudanese pound has gained value against the US dollar over the last 3 days. The local currency now trades at 33 South Sudanese pounds to a dollar, compared to 45 South Sudanese pounds for a dollar last week. Traders say this should lead to a drop in commodity prices and boost business. And one analyst says the recent arrival of SPLA-IO forces in Juba and the subsequent prospect for peace are having a positive impact on the economy. Mungome Devs Rakarinj has more from Juba.
The 2-year-old Helena Alfasi operates a small restaurant at Juba's Hainim neighborhood. She used to sell a plate of food for anywhere between 10 to 25 South Sudanese pounds before the devaluation of the pound. Speaking in Arabic, Alfa says she has had to double her menu prices to meet market prices.
Basala bi 20-30. They are scared.
Until today, things in the market have been very expensive. You can buy a small bundle of green vegetables at 20 to 30 pounds, a small bottle of cooking oil at 120 to 150 pounds, two small tomatoes are for 10 pounds. Everyone has been saying there are no dollars. People are talking about dollars. Dollars, even when I've never seen dollars in my entire life.
She says her suppliers have already promised to reduce the prices once the dollar drops a little more in value against the pound. Maliam Majolini, general manager of the last company, which deals in procurement and logistics, says in the last few months she lost more than 60% of her clients because of a shortage of dollars. But she says she has received more business proposals in the last 2 days following the appreciation of the local currency. Today, the dollar is selling for 33 South Sudanese pounds on the black market. And Majolini says that is helping business.
Now we are seeing that everyone is feeling better about the country, maybe. And now I'm actually receiving demands on from notable clients who are Africans who want to enter South Sudan as a new market for them. I don't want to disclose their name, but usually I didn't have that before, like new investors to come to South Sudan.
Ahmed Morgan, a professor of economics at the University of Juba, says in the past people were expecting the worst, so the local currency lost value against the US dollar.
Some businesses are closing down and they are moving out their currencies, and they cannot move pounds, of course. They move the US dollars away from the country. Now, the good news which has led to the appreciation of the pound again is, if the political situation in the country, where people are expecting the government of national unity to be formed in the near future.
Morgan says he expects commodity prices to fall in the short run, but he warns this development is only temporary.
Yeah, of course, since South Sudan depends mostly on the imports from the East African countries, definitely as the value of the pound appreciates, we will expect prices at least to come down a bit, although it will not come down to the original prices they have. As we know, prices are always rigid downwards and flexible upward. They may come down, but not to the original prices where they started from.
Morgan says the government must find a lasting solution to the depreciation of the South Sudanese pound. He says South Sudan must diversify its economy, produce locally, grow food, and begin to sell exports. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
The South African-based mobile telephone, MTN, which is one of several cell phone companies operating in South Sudan, says it will have to lay off dozens of employees due to the country's economic crisis, which has hurt business. Company officials say they have cut the number of foreigners working in South Sudan by more than 70% and will have to cut local staff by more than half. For VOA News, Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
MTN is the second largest private employer in South Sudan to announce plans to lay off staff and downsize its operations this year. It follows South Sudan Breweries Limited, a franchise of Samila, another South African-based company, which announced similar plans late last year. Kombulani Dilomo is the head of corporate services at MTN South Sudan.
We have in total just above 170 staff members. And yes, we have started laying off people. The way we structured it was that we started with international staff. So most of their notices were ending yesterday. So end of March, those that were affected left the company. So now we are going to evaluate what that means for the company going forward. And then the next step, obviously, is dealing with national staff.
Dilomo says the company was immediately affected by South Sudan's central bank decision last December to devalue the local currency. So far, he says the company has faced difficulties importing equipment needed for generators, spare parts, antennas, and scratch cards. Dilomo says the company needs U.S. dollars in order to purchase and import these items. But he says the current floating rate of the U.S. dollar to the South Sudanese pounds does not favor its operations. He says most of its contractors are foreign companies that are also paid in dollars, making it harder for the company to compete in South Sudan. Dilomo says the decision to restructure its operations will involve more layoffs in the future.
We are restructuring the company more than just retrenching employees. You see, the economic condition in the country is the one that has led MTN to come to this decision. It's not an easy decision to take because, remember, we're dealing with employees, we're dealing with people that we've built a relationship with, we're dealing with people that are part and parcel of the DNA of the company.
South Sudanese nationals employed by the company say the impending layoffs will make it hard to feed their families, but they understand the company's decision. Stephen James is one of them.
I feel normal because this, the current situation of the country is the one contributing this layoff of the national staff. Because if the company did not do that, the company cannot able to run the services to the people.
Employee Aloro Joseph, who works as a marketer, says he does not know what else he will do if he loses his job.
Well, I feel threatened, and like it said, the company wants to continue living. And I feel threatened, and we informed about it, and we have taken the message. And currently, as we stand right now, there's nothing we can do about it right now.
Many small businesses have closed since South Sudan's economy began to decline after violence erupted in 2013 and the subsequent economic crisis. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a Sudanese woman is honored by the U.S. State Department for her efforts to organize tea sellers. That story when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
Did you get help from your community to fund your education?
No, not at all. It's only my family support, but no community support.
No, it was me and my brothers, so we struggled for my education. If I was someone to be dropped out from school, it could be, but I struggled. I was like, I have to be someone in the future.
The community that I have get support to my education most is Josuit community. They help me a lot in so many things that I cannot be able to do them, but they tell me really there is nothing impossible.
For my community, the youth, I tell them I'm a student, they can give me something at least to keep me at school. Entirely community help in my education.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. France has by far the largest percentage of people who were born in Africa. The majority of France's African diaspora live in Paris. Earlier this week, Patrick Klugman, Paris' deputy mayor, spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Klugman began by saying that he was proud of the cultural diversity Africans bring to the City of Light, but is mindful of the challenges they face.
I often say that we are the most non-African African city, because we have a lot of Africans living in Paris, from Senegal, from Ivory Coast, from Congo, from Mali, totally part of the Parisian life and the history of Paris.
Yes and no.
Yes and no, but they go back and forth with Africa, and this is very natural. And our links are very strong, very powerful.
Could you tell me a little bit about the themes of inclusion and equality as it relates to the African diaspora population within Paris? Because I know they're not really mainstreamed in the same way.
It's a real challenge because you have always a risk that people stay together, do not match, do not mix. And, of course, it exists among African communities as well as other communities. And now we are doing a lot, really to match people. For instance, at Paris, we are supporting projects in Africa driven by communities in Paris, in their countries of origin. And this is to strengthen the links between diaspora and Africa, Paris, and the cities in Africa that we know, and it works pretty well.
Can you draw a distinction between your policy or your approach, shall we say, between the North African population of the Arab base, the former colonies, if you like, and the sub-Saharan Africa?
Well, we have the two populations in Paris. They're very different, obviously, but we deal with them the same way. We want that they themselves to be at their ease in Paris, to be part of the Parisian life, to mix with other people from other origins. Diversity is a great chance, opportunity for Paris. You know that Africa is probably the land for the highest growth in the coming years and decades. And for us, it's a chance to have all this population living in Paris, making business from Paris. Of course, there are problems. Of course, sometimes I would say French look at them very strangely and not sympathetically. But we are very keen on putting people together. Mm-hmm. And African people, North African, they have their place in Paris. It's not a worry for us. Like in New York, I mean, if you don't have room or place for these people in your city, you're not a globalized city.
That was the deputy mayor of Paris, Patrick Klugman. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. Women rights activists in the newly created Wau state are calling on their government to educate more girls. As part of International Women's Day, which was celebrated on March 8, women in Wau say too many parents in remote parts of the state keep girls at home to work as babysitters for siblings or look after livestock. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau.
Hundreds of women sang, ululated and danced as they celebrated International Women's Day at the State Secretariat in Wau. Women leaders here say they had to postpone celebrations on March 8 due to security reasons. At today's celebration, several women called for more comprehensive efforts to educate girls. Rights activist Monica Ilario says hundreds of parents in rural areas force their daughters to look after livestock rather than go to school.
They are not giving them chance to go to the school. Even here in the town, within the town, sometimes you see this issue of big number dropping out from the school. And you see the girls, she's still underage, but she's carrying a child. So this is really the problem women are facing in this state. We urge all those who have concern that to assist women.
Viola Philip agrees. She says communities in Wau must end traditional practices which suppress women and girls from achieving their dreams.
In some counties, there are some obstacles that like opposing the education of girls. Because sometimes there is no encouragement from parents. This is related also to the traditional practices, the cultural beliefs. Yes, babysitters. So this is one of the reasons.
Angelina Anthony Ubur, a Wau State Government Minister, urges women to encourage their husbands to cultivate their farms once the rainy season starts to help end food shortages in the state. Speaking in Arabic, she says educating women will help increase agriculture production and ensure that every family has food to eat.
I want to say that education should be a priority in every home, even though tuition fees are high and the cost of living is high. Let us do something to make sure that our children, especially girls, are educated. It is because of the current insecurity in part of the state that women are unable to go to their farms. We want this to stop so that all women by next month should be planting seeds in their farms, and we call on the NGOs to provide us with seeds.
Ilario, Philip and Ubur all condemn the practice of early marriage. They say parents must recognize that a girl's education is just as important as a boy's in Wau and everywhere in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Wau.
A Sudanese woman from Nuba Mountains was honored this week by the State Department for her courage in forming the Women's Food and Tea Sellers Cooperative in Khartoum, which now boasts more than 8,000 clients, many of them displaced women like herself. Awadia Mahmoud is being called a champion of women for challenging social norms and overcoming economic obstacles. Ayen Bior explains.
Awadia Mahmoud says she is proud of the community of tea sellers she has built in the Sudanese capital because now it is easier for the women to stand up to officials who often harass them or even throw them in jail. Selling tea on the side of the road in Sudan is one of the few ways women like Mahmoud can make money to feed their families, but strict government regulations that favor larger tea companies often prevent them from running independent tea stands. It has taken Mahmoud years of hard work and relentless determination to build up the tea sellers union and the cooperative. That resilience was recognized this week by the U.S. Department of State at the International Women of Courage Awards ceremony. Mahmoud, who is the second Sudanese woman to receive the award, says the entire experience has been humbling.
Thanks God. Now I am in U.S. I got the award for all Sudanese women, and I will have new work for all Sudan states. Why are they arresting us? They are saying our food is not clean or healthy, and the tea stand are not clean. But if we have a nice place so we can help ourselves and we can be in a good economic situation.
But her achievements have come with a heavy price. Before establishing the cooperatives, Mahmoud said she was jailed on and off for 4 years and often threatened by authorities.
I went to prison because I was helping women and I was distributing free and car rickshaws. I distribute 60 rickshaws to the poor women in Sudan. But unfortunately, the authority did not leave me alone. I continually end up in a prison for 4 years. So I sold my house and my mother's house.
Mahmoud says the harassment from police was constant. She said she knew early on that she would have to organize the tea sellers in order to stand up to the government. She says although she is not formally educated, she knew that her rights were being violated.
I work in public market Khartoum. The problem it was facing me and all Sudanese tea women, that they were arresting us from our place in the market. But thanks God, we managed to organize ourselves. We framed a union. Now we can rely on ourselves. Women can go to the bank of family and they can give them 5 million Sudanese pounds for any women so they can help themselves and they can educate their children. I'm willing to organize all tea and food sellers in Sudan.
Mahmoud addressed a group of the diaspora at the U.S. Institute of Peace yesterday afternoon after receiving her award earlier this week. She says she wants to help other Sudanese women who have been oppressed. She says it is important that more people stand up to defend their rights so that future generations can thrive. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
VOA fellow Nadia Taha contributed to that report. And that brings us to the end of our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song No More War by South Sudanese reggae artist Ras Corby.
Just checking up the global scene all over the world right now, seeing Rasta cities. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, to stop the war. No more war in Africa, the people gotta leave up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today, they're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide, not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world? That love. So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way. They need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution. No mankind has it on its own. We were created in the image and the likeness of Jah. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun come. And even times the rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart? No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia. We gotta keep it nice and neat. Can't you tell me how?
That's our show for this Friday. We leave you now. We have been listening to Rex Corby with the song No More War. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. You have it.